And I'm going to talk about how we should view ourselves as Christians, and what are some of the attributes that we need to show. Now, I'm not going to go through all of them, but there's a few that I want to focus on. First one is confidence, and that is a trust in God, obviously, and in one's abilities and contributions that come through faith. The next one is humility. Now, that may seem a little counterintuitive. Humility is in a Christian context is associated with a positive self-image, because it really involves recognizing one's abilities, the gifts that you've been given, and that they're to be used for God's glory, not one's own. And in value, expressed really as a sense of personal significance. How are you valued by God? And it comes from understanding what our role in God's creation is all about. And then lastly, honor. Honor can be used to describe the respect, the esteem that one feels from others that are, that are due you because of the other virtues that you express. And it reflects our faith and influence of their actions, of the actions through what you are doing. Now, all of that will kind of come together as we move along here. So in setting a basis for this morning's encouragement, I'm going to use a familiar example to a few of us here. The Marine Corps. All right. So I want you to really kind of think about, why is it that the Marines have such a sense of confidence and honor in being a Marine? Do the Marines only go out and enlist people that already have these characteristics? No, they don't. They're taught in basic training. So, but there's a reason for that. And that'll all kind of come about as we speak about it. So what are the reasons that, that confidence and honor that the Marines instill? The saying, once a Marine, always a Marine, it's true. There's camaraderie, there's honor, there's confidence. But those are all based in several things. They don't just teach you honor. They don't just teach you camaraderie or confidence. They're instilled in every recruit in basic training. And it all starts with the stories that are handed down by those that have gone on before.
Basic training, the other guys.
The other guys, yeah. So it starts there, okay? But the way that it is taught is taught about the people and the experiences that went on before, their sacrifices, their courage in the face of the enemy, and most of all, their fierce loyalty with their fellow Marines and the Marine Corps. Their motto, Semper Fidelis, means always faithful. And the battlefield creed of no one left behind. They'll sacrifice, they'll jeopardize their lives to go back and retrieve the body of a fallen Marine. All of that is drilled into us from the bellowing, muscle-bound instructors that are stalking back and forth on a stage on the lecture halls as they recount those stories. Now, this all started 249 years ago last week at a place called Tun Tavern. Has some significance there. Born in a bar. It was the Marines that went on before. Archibald Henderson was the longest-serving commandant of the Marine Corps. He was the commandant for 39 years. He served over 50 years, 53 years to be exact, 52 years to be exact. and men like Presley O'Bannon, who was the first one to plant a U.S. flag on foreign soil during a conflict. That's where we get, and that was in Tripoli. That's where we get one of the verses of the Marine Corps hymn. John Bassalone, Medal of Honor winner at Guadalcanal in the Pacific. Smedley D. Butler won 2 Medals of Honor. Dan Daly, 2 Medals of Honor. And the grand old man, Lieutenant General Chesty Puller, decorated, most decorated Marine ever, won 5 Navy Crosses. That's only one level below the Medal of Honor. 5 Navy Crosses and 1 Distinguished Service Cross. Those are just some of the men. And then the battles fought, where they were outnumbered and outgunned. The Marine hymn starts out with from the halls of Montezuma. It's the verse from the Battle of Chapultepec during the Mexican-American War. And Master Gunny Sergeant Doty, how do we recognize the Battle of Chapultepec and the bloodshed?
Red stripe.
The red stripe on the dress blues. And Sergeant Doty, what do we get from Bailu Woods? What nickname?
Devil
Dogs. Because during that war, the French were retreating, the Marines were going in, and the Germans said that they were fighting like dogs from hell.
Tufelhunde.
Yes, I forgot the German name. Yes. That was 50 years ago, people. And we still, that's instilled so deep, that honor that goes with that. And I don't know if you planned it or not, but all 3 of the songs this morning, there's one of them that the last one that we 220, I know. In the third verse, it says, "Brothers, we are treading where the saints have trod." That is along the lines of, and all 3 of the songs, by the way, were very along the lines of what it is that I'm trying to bring out this morning. So all this and much more is drilled into every recruit. That's our heritage. Every Marine stands on the shoulders of those that have gone on before. So I say this all in explanation of how the Marine Corps holds on to its traditions, the camaraderie and the honor and the commitment, because those attributes are instilled into every Marine as their heritage. So remembering those that went before and their heroic deeds is part of the organization. Well, guess what? The Lord's church has a history of great men and women who have accomplished even greater feats than any Marine on any field of battle that has ever been fought. Yet we don't take advantage of those exploits of the heroes of the past to stand on their shoulders and have the honor of being in the same organization, the Lord's Army. We are in the Lord's army. Hebrews 12 is really a bibliography, a listing of those names, their deeds, their heroism, and their faith, all as a result of their faith. Jesus said that John the Baptist was the greater than all of the Old Testament greats, yet we today are greater than all of those in the past. So let's look at some of those that went on before us. And in the back of your mind, realize that you are greater than them. We have more power, better weapons, and more potential than them all. So we're going to start with the narrative of 3 individuals: Abner, Joab, and the one you probably don't hear too much about, Benaniah. Benaniah is the one that I really want to focus on. But these other two individuals here, it really provides an interesting perspective on their roles and their personal traits as they serve different leaders in the time of King David. Each of these men displayed some unique attributes, and they had different impacts on the biblical narrative during that time. First one is Abner. He was a pretty opportunistic commander. Abner was the commander of King Saul's army and played a very significant role in Saul's reign. And then after King Saul's death, Abner initially supported Ishbosheth, who was King Saul's son, for his kingship against the tribe of Judah, which was led by King David. All right, so you have these opposing forces here. But he had a lot of political maneuvering that went on in his life. He was a skilled warrior, quite a strategist. He knew what he was doing on the battlefield, but his actions were often marred by political ambition rather than loyalty and moral principles. His decision to shift alliance to David after he had a falling out with Ishbosheth shows that he had a very pragmatic approach to power, and that's in 2 Samuel 3. He was prone to violence and vengeance. He had a rivalry, quite a rivalry with Joab, and it led to a lot of murder and bloodshed. All right, and it indicates that it was a very brutal time in their history. Okay, that they used violence often to settle scores. And then we've got Joab. Joab was a pretty ruthless general, and he served as the commander of David's army, and he was a key figure in establishing David's kingship. But he was also, that was probably helped him out on many occasions, was actually David's cousin too. Played a part in his prominent military position. But Joab was fiercely loyal to David. But his loyalty often displayed some ruthlessness on his part and some pretty crafty methods that he used to gain what it is that he wanted. He was instrumental in securing David's kingdom, again, often by pretty brutal means, including the elimination of potential rivals like Absalom, and who was David's son, and even Abner. Abner came to quite an end at the hand of Joab. But Joab was pretty politically astute as well. He understood the dynamics of power and well enough to maintain his military position for quite a long time. But his methods didn't go unnoticed by David. So David, on his dying bed, told his son Solomon, "Don't let Joab go down to his grave a happy man." So Solomon understood what he meant and took care of Joab later. And then finally, Benaniah. Benaniah is the one we really want to take a look at very closely. He was a pretty honorable warrior. He was a commander in David's army, known for his bravery and his leadership. And he later became the commander of Solomon's army as well. He was known for his great acts of courage, including killing two Moabite warriors, a giant Egyptian, and a lion in a pit on a snowy day. We'll get to that point a little bit later. So unlike Joab and Abner, Benaniah's loyalty he wasn't hindered by political gamesmanship, manipulation, or ruthlessness. We don't see that recorded anywhere. His support for Solomon during Adonijah's when he tried to usurp the kingship, the throne, illustrates really his commitment to the rightful leadership and the stability of the nation that his father, King David, had established. So when we compare Joab and Abner, both those guys were loyal to their causes, but their actions often reflected a lot of personal ambition or vendettas that drove them. But Benaniah, on the other hand, he showed a purer form of loyalty, seen by service to the rightful leadership, which eventually would have been Solomon. And there was no overtones on Benaniah's part. He wasn't trying to gain anything for personal reasons. He wasn't trying to manipulate anyone. Joab and Abner, there was a lot of political scheming, a lot of violence to achieve the goals that they wanted. Not necessarily that were good, but for personal reasons. Both those guys, they were kind of complicated individuals by their morality, certainly questionable actions. They were effective military leaders, no doubt about that. But there's more to being an effective military leader than just your victories in the battle. If you're not morally upright and loyal, then all of that doesn't, then your victories on the battlefield don't mean anything. Benaniah is remembered more favorably, highlighting really his role as a faithful officer who transitioned smoothly, very smoothly, from King David to his son Solomon. Benaniah, again, a lot less prominent in the biblical narrative. You know, there's not as much written about Benaniah. He's more of a guy in the background, if you will. You really got to take a look at all of the things that he's done. He was an exceptional model for leadership. His story is briefly told with the narratives in King David's reign, but his acts of bravery and loyalty shine brightly as examples to each and every one of us today. 2 Samuel 23, 1 Chronicles 11, they introduce Benaniah there as a valiant fighter who achieved great, performed great achievements. As mentioned, he struck down two of Moab's greatest warriors, went down into a pit on a snowy day and killed a lion, and then defeated an intimidating, huge Egyptian. So the scriptures highlight his courage and skill, and they really elevate him to the command of Israel's elite guard. He wasn't of the three, but he was of the 30, if you're familiar with David's mighty men. And then later under Solomon, he was in charge of the entire army. So what lessons do we learn from Benaniah? How is he one of the heroes that we should look up to? One of those shoulders that we should stand on? The courage to face a lion. Imagine a cold, snowy day. Ground is pretty slippery, visibility pretty low, when most of the people would probably be inside trying to stay warm. But there's Benaniah finding himself face to face in a pit with a lion. I mean, I can't imagine being in the same field, flat field, with a lion. And if I've got a huge weapon, okay, grenade launcher, light assault anti-tank weapon, a law, because they're pretty quick, but he jumps into a pit. It says he goes down into the pit. He wasn't in the pit and the lion jumped in. It says he went down into the pit with a lion. Think about that. I mean, a lion is a pretty impressive beast. I mean, they're... a house cat is hard to hold on to when they don't want to be held on to, right? They are really tough to hold on to. And I couldn't imagine a bobcat. I've heard stories about how brutal they are. And they're only yay big. Leopard, a little bit bigger, but a lion on a snowy day in a pit. I mean, come on. I mean, that, I think that probably beats Presley O'Bannon and even Chesty Puller. Forgive me. So, you know, less than ideal situation, obviously. Now, one of the unofficial mottos of the Marine Corps of late is improvise, adapt, and overcome. It means even when faced with challenging situations, Marines are to be resourceful, adjust their strategies as needed, and find ways to succeed despite the obstacles that are right in front of you. Now, this is where we're going to transition a little bit to how do we do some of these things. Don't be jumping in pits, okay? I'm not talking about that. But this act of bravery on our part isn't just physical. It's spiritual. Like Benaniah, we're often called to face our lions as well. The fears, the challenges, and seemingly impossible situations that we face individually, and they're different for you than they are for me or anyone else. So the lesson here is important, that courage is not the absence of fear, it is the victory over it. No one on a battlefield, I will say maybe the other way around, everyone on a battlefield is afraid. If you're not, then there's something, you maybe need to see the doctor afterwards. Let's face it, somebody's trying to kill you. If you're not afraid, then there's really, you got other issues, okay? So, facing our lions, what lions are you facing in your life today? What fears need to be confronted with the boldness that Benaniah had? Lions in our lives can be seen as maybe fear of failure, fear of rejection, or even stepping into a new role or responsibility. Take, for example, someone that, well, young lady we'll call Robin. She's a professional, but she's afraid to speak up in meetings for fear of saying something that is wrong or that someone would ridicule her for saying. Her lion is the fear of professional failure. So to confront this, Robin could start by maybe preparing points before that she wants to discuss, giving her the confidence that she knows what she's talking about so that when it's time to speak, she can speak. Or of a young man with a fear of public speaking. Your lion is crouched behind the fear that you don't think you have anything of value to offer. That's not true. That's a paper lion. So in the world, courage is sometimes adversity. Use a couple examples here. First one, Rosa Parks. If you're not familiar with her, she was the one who refused to give up her seat in 1959 in Montgomery, Alabama. So, 55, I'm sorry. And it's a prime example of facing a lion. That lion that she faced was racial segregation as well as retaliation and arrest by the authorities. But her action actually, I don't know if you're familiar with it, what that caused is a general strike that no one would then take the buses because blacks were supposed to take the back seats in the buses. She, and there's lots of backstory to it, but there wasn't one available back there, so she sat in a white-only seat. Well, when she got chastised, arrested for it, it led to a general strike for all of the public transportation in, first off, Montgomery, Alabama, then it spread. Well, that led to a major issue with loss of revenue by the transit companies, and that was actually the start of the civil rights movement in earnest here in the United States. So she fought back against the unjust laws of segregation at the time. And then there was another young lady that's a little bit more recent, and I'm going to try to pronounce her name. Her name is Malala Yousafzai. She was a young Pakistani activist who, for female education, because in Pakistan, the girls were not allowed to be educated. So she stood up against that. She was actually shot for her activism, but she continued to champion that cause of education for girls worldwide. So her courage to face the terrible threats, I mean, threats of death, that empowered others to gain an education, illustrates an act of facing one's lions. So now let's kind of move to Benaniah with his facing the giants. What giants do you have in your life? How can we use Benaniah? Was Benaniah's, were they just side notes of things that he did, or were they meant to be there for us to be able to learn something from it? He faced giants. Do we have giants today that we are facing? He had a giant Egyptian. He was armed. Benaniah was armed only with a club. So what did he do? He grabbed the spear from this giant Egyptian and kills him with his own weapon, similar to what David did with Goliath. But this encounter teaches us about the resourcefulness and the power of turning one's enemies' strengths against them. So in our spiritual battles, we need to remember that the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. We are faced with usually the giants in our life, in our life today, aren't the tall Egyptians, but they're but we have to remember that our weapons aren't carnal against them. You're not going to take your weapon against an enemy that is trying to kill you spiritually. Your shotgun, your pistol, your AR-15 isn't going to be of any value to someone that is coming at you spiritually. So like Benaniah, we can use the truth of God to disarm the lies and attacks of the enemy. Just like when Jesus fought off the attacks, the temptations, same thing, attacks and temptations, of Satan in the wilderness, he used God's word as his weapons. So the point brings out our ability to turn the challenges that we have into testimonies against or in face of our enemy. Maybe the challenge is dealing with workplace conflicts that you might have. Those of you that work in places that sometimes they're a little less congenial than what you would really like. So remember the passage, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." So instead of seeking retaliation, then maybe reconciliation and understanding is what we should really use. Instead of confronting someone else, maybe understand what it is, why it is that they're saying or doing or believing the things that they believe. Or how about loyalty in the middle of turmoil? We just went through a terrible time in this country with political turmoil. And when you hear of the angst, the meltdowns of people as a result of the recent election, you really have to stand back and say, wow, that really, I mean, to the point where you've got to take time off from work, you've got to go see a social worker, come on, you know, but That's where some people are. And I'm not making fun of them. I feel sorry for them. You know, that they are that weak that, I mean, let's face it, even if the election would have went another way, I'm not going out and I'm not going to seek a head shrink to make sure that I can deal with tomorrow. Okay, you just deal with it. But that's not where everybody's at. So sometimes we have to understand where they're at. So in our story here, Benaniah's loyalty to David and later to Solomon shows his steady stance in the midst of turmoil that is much needed today. When Adonijah tried to usurp the throne from Solomon, Benaniah stood firm with the rightful king, demonstrating his faithful allegiance. So in a world where loyalties can be shifting as much as the sand, Benaniah reminds us of the importance of faithfulness to God, to our principles, and to those that we support. There are areas in our lives where we need to show loyalty and steadfastness. So how can you stand firm in your commitments even when the pressure mounts? Loyalty today can be challenging, understood, all right? But take, for example, maintaining faithfulness in marriage. You know, in an age where divorce is pretty prevalent, loyalty involves commitment to mutual respect, communication, love, and it's grounded, obviously, in Ephesians 5. And the scripture guides how the spouses are supposed to treat each other and emphasizing love and commitment. So in the workplace, loyalty can show itself in our integrity, in our dealings, and our consistency in our performance, even when shortcuts are tempting. So the kind of loyalty not only builds personal character, but also increases your professional reputation over time as well. Consistent dedication to a cause. You know, there's one last example that I want to use. Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He was a German preacher, an anti-Nazi activist during World War II, and he showed his loyalty to biblical beliefs during the war. He was vocally opposed to Hitler's regime and ultimately his arrest and execution. But even though he knew that that was a very high probability that he was going to suffer for his outspokenness, his commitment to his faith and moral convictions, despite the immense personal risk, displayed his loyalty to the principles of justice and righteousness. Now, I'm not saying that he was a Christian, but his biblical beliefs were strong enough to have him stand up against Hitler's regime, and he paid the ultimate price for it. So, in summing up, Benaniah might not be as well known as David, Solomon, Abner, or Joab, but his life speaks volumes to us today. He was a man of action whose faith was proven on the battlefield and whose loyalty was tested in the political arena as well. So as you step out this week, may you do so with the courage of Benaniah, ready to face your lions, equipped to turn the enemy's strengths against him, and steadfast in your godly allegiance. Remember that God is with you, mighty to save and powerful to sustain. So welcome the challenges and the commitments with the courage and loyalty that Benaniah showed. Whether it's overcoming personal fears, turning adversities into opportunities to share the truth, or remaining steadfast when it's easier to give in, we are called to live a life of faithfulness. So just like the history that is drilled into each Marine, It's, you know, that is, it comes from the history of those that went on before. The church has much more history, greater heroes than any Marine that ever lived. So we have to remember that and continue to bring up the exploits of those in the past and recognize we stand on their shoulders. We are in God's army, our Marine Corps. But that's where our honor and commitment and loyalty comes from. So let's go forward. Let's stand and we'll be dismissed.